Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
We're on our new series called 50 Shades of Solomon. And if you've been living under a rock, then you probably have missed this huge movie release that came out Friday, 50 Shades of Grey. It's based upon a book that was a world bestseller, 100 million copies sold worldwide. In the UK, it was the best-selling paperback of all times. Fandango reported that they had more pre-sale tickets than any other rated R movie in their history. So obviously, this is a topic that many people are talking about. And so we decided, what if we bring it into the church and we discuss what God says about this idea of sex and what how he views it. Now, a disclaimer for parents, your call as to how old your children should be to hear this. Myself personally, if my children were 11, 12 years old, I'd be okay with that. Some of you may think that's too young. Some of you, your child may be here and they're 17 and you want them to leave. That's your call. Just telling you what we're talking about. It's a rated PG-13 message. Nothing really, harsh going on next week, though. Whew, that's going to be crazy. Another disclaimer, sex is not a dirty subject. God is not ashamed of the human body. He's seen you naked. He can handle it. All right? The other thing is if you're a guest, especially if you have a church background, I'm asking you to give grace. This is your first time here. I understand this is a weird topic to discuss for your first time. We are a Bible-believing church. Jesus is the only way of salvation. We believe it. We teach it. You just happen to come on an odd topic. But we're going to roll on through this. So a little grace. Well, last week we talked about sex being far more than physical. God says that the man shall leave his father and mother, man and woman leave, and that they shall be united together in one flesh, right? That we said that sex was always supposed to be far more than just a physical activity, but it was soul and body coming together, meshing together, becoming one. That there was a far greater connection as God originally intended it to be, far more than what we give it credit for today. Now, we don't have time to go through that and review because we got a lot to cover, but if you missed last week, listen to it on our website, revealvineyard.com. My message today is called You're Asking the Wrong Questions. Life is a rhythm of seasons that come and go, and they rise and fall. Ecclesiastes tells us that there is a time for everything, or we could say that there is a season for everything in life. And this holds true throughout the spectrum of life, including our relationships. And so maybe you're here today and you find yourself in a season that maybe you're not all that happy with. Maybe you find yourself in a season of being single. And that's difficult, especially around Valentine's Day when it seems like everyone is in love and love is in the air. But maybe you find yourself in that season of being single. And you're maybe struggling with that a little bit. The college student that attends our church when he's not away at college, and he posted on Facebook that I am single by choice. And I thought, good for him. But then I read the rest of it. He says, the ladies choose not to go out with me. I was like, well, I guess that's true. It started off really strong. But so maybe you're single today. Maybe you're single because of a loss. Much more difficult even then. Maybe you're single because of a divorce or maybe a spouse who has passed on. And maybe you're in a season of engagement and you're excited and you're planning your wedding and everything is just moving forward. Or maybe you're in a honeymoon season and you can't wait to get out of this place, right? Because you're in the honeymoon season. Or maybe you're like some of us, myself and my wife, where you are long into the marriage season. Maybe 10 years. My wife and I, we are approaching 23 years. Maybe you're 40 years. Whatever that might look like, we're all in a season. And regardless of what season you find yourself in, we all have to ask ourselves, how do we make the most of every season? Because every season in life, including relationships, come with its own unique set of challenges. And it comes with unresolved tension, and it comes with questions that need answers. And when it comes to seasons of love and relationships, I think that often we ask the wrong questions. And when we ask the wrong questions, we miss out on the right questions and we never get the answers that we actually need. And so, regardless of what season you're in today, let's ask, how do we get the most out of that season? So we're going to jump in to the Song of Solomon, written about 1,000 years before Christ. It's written from a man and woman's perspective. It bounces around from marriage to courtship to the honeymoon to, you know, all over the place. And we're going to look at Song of Solomon chapter 2, and then we're also going to look at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We're going to blend these two together, so there's a lot that we're going to have to go through. So season. If you're a note taker, what seasons do we all go through? The first one we'll put up on the screen. The first season that we'll all go through is a season of preparation. This may be a winter season. Look at our passage in Song of Solomon 2, chapter 11 and 12. It says this. She says, "See, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come, and the cooing of doves is heard in our land." So she recognizes that in the relationship, they have come out of a season of winter, and now they are into a new season of spring. And maybe today you are wishing that you were in a season of spring, relationally speaking. And you wish you had that perfect someone who was in your life, because winter, or when you're single, I understand, can be extremely difficult. Spring is easy, right? I mean, it says here, flowers appear on the earth and the season of singing has come. And when you're in love, it's everybody's happy and you're smiling for no reason. And the cooing of doves is heard in the land. Men, we should never use that word cooing, but it's in here. And the cooing of doves is in our land. And I remember early in my 20s, being single was often very difficult for me. And I would remember looking around and thinking, everyone else seems to have someone to love except for me. And I would even look at the ugly people, just being honest. And I'd look at the ugly people and think, even this guy's uglier than me, and he has someone. So, granted, they were both ugly, but they were ugly together. And that's what mattered to me. Hey, when you're single, do you ever compare yourself to other people and you think, I am better looking than that guy? And he has someone, right? I mean, maybe it's just me, but I think you do it as well. So, regardless of where we find ourselves, it can be extremely difficult. Spring is easy. Spring is life, and life is in bloom. What does winter look like? Everything looks dead in winter, right? Especially in colder climates. Relationally, winter can be extremely difficult, especially if you're coming out of a long-term relationship. Maybe it's a recent divorce or the loss of a spouse. Winter, in those moments, can be crippling. And wanting to share your life with someone, it can almost consume you. So let me offer some encouragement. Winter can have a purpose if we will approach this in the right way. In other words, it doesn't have to be pointless and just a grind. By all accounts, trees in the wintertime, in winter regions, are primarily in a state of dormancy. Dormancy is not death. Now, if you look at it, they may look like they're dead. I have a tree in my front yard. All the leaves are off of it, and it looks like it's dead. But dormancy is not death. Rather, over the winter time, it's in a place of a resting phase, but the essential life process is still taking place. Now, hear me. Relationally, winter in our lives, when we're single, should be a resting phase, a place of preparation that will lead us into springtime when the relationship finally comes. So we can use this time of winter to ask the right questions. The questions that we should be asking are questions like, what does God need to do in me during this season of winter when I'm single? What does God need to heal in me? Where do I need to mature? But instead, we become anxious because we hate the season of winter. Winter's good for a moment, right? And then everybody wants winter to end. And so then we start asking the wrong questions. God, when are you going to bring me someone? God, how long will I be in this season? God, why does everyone else have love but I don't have love? And when is this season going to pass? Those are the wrong questions. Listen, wrong questions during the winter means wrong focus, and it could be the difference between health or dysfunction when spring finally arrives and a relationship enters into your life. I'm going to take a look at a video of a Reveal member who had his own lengthy stay in a time of winter, and I want you to see how this one individual handled it. Let's go ahead and bring the lights down and roll that, please.
My name is Les Reinhard, and this is my story. I was married to my wife, Becky, for over 22 years. We celebrated our 22nd wedding anniversary in April of 2012, and we married when we were 20 years old. A few years into our marriage, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And ended up going through radiation treatments for that. And at the end of that, she was told she wouldn't be able to have children. And so we moved forward with that. In 1995, our first daughter, Jade, was born. And in 1997, Wilson was born. And in 2000, Mason was born. And Easton. And in the end, we had 8 biological children. So we ended up in 2010 adopting 2 girls, my great nieces. December of 2011, Becky was diagnosed with breast cancer. Started her treatments in January of 2012, went through the chemotherapy, among other things, as she moved forward into it. Was given a double mastectomy, had a clear PET scan in May of that year, and then ended up passing in August of 2012. So I found myself in a season of life that I hadn't expected, a widower with 10 children. And some people think that the, wow, you have 10 kids and, you know, how do you do this? And that's grace of God, you would do the same thing. You would do the same thing. They were actually a benefit to me because there's things that have to be done. You have responsibilities and you're going to take care of your children. So the bigger effect on me, immediately is getting news and I'm going to call Becky and tell her about it, and then realizing that you're not going to, you can't do that. The longing to hear her voice, to have something talk to me. In the movies, you get this sense like, they always hear their spouse's voice at the right time, at the right place in the movie. And, so I waited for that, and I waited for that, and it doesn't happen. So and I started realizing that we're not going to do a lot of the things we want to do together. That the things that we didn't address, I don't get to go back and address. I don't get to fix some of the things that I did. I don't get the opportunity to do that. So as the survivor, I'm just going to speak to you who are married, fix it now. Because one day you're going to work on it, and you want to work on it with them. You don't want to work on it by yourself. So during this time, I wrestled with things personally, self-reflective, and kind of started to examine things. And I had to essentially, in a way, allow God to open me up to myself, to show me myself and to work on me in those areas, expose things to me that before I hadn't seen or, denied or whatever. I had to work through those things. I will say that I'm not prone to loneliness. I've just never been. I'm not codependent. I can be with people. I can be by myself. I'm not really prone to that. And with that, I've never felt so lonely in my life after Becky went home to be with Jesus. That loneliness is a new feeling for me, and so, but I didn't want that to be a driving force in finding somebody, because 2 points in time where people do that, and it's typically very early on. And I think also that also might be driven by the fact that if you don't get into a new relationship, you are left with having to wrestle with your own self and examine that, and in a new relationship you can kind of put that aside and focus on the new relationship. The other thing is, I've seen people, they wait too long, and it, all of a sudden they're just so lonely they don't know what to do with themselves, so they have to do something and they get out. I started praying, God, you know me better than I know me. You know more what I want and need than I know what I want and need. And so my prayer was really, you know me, so if there's somebody out there that fits the criteria that I need to have, you're going to need to reveal it. So that leads to a night in August when, oddly enough, one of my wife's aunts called to speak with Jade, and she had called her to ask her if she could send me the information of somebody that she knew. And so Jade said that would be okay, and that led to a phone call. And the girl lived in Yuma, so I don't have to bring her in front of the kids. It's a safe distance away. Everything's got to be over the phone. And the conversations went so well. It was really well. And so it developed from there. I ended up taking a trip down to meet for lunch, day trip, come back. Still lives in Yuma, safe distance away. Still didn't think it was, figured we'd be good friends, and because, it was, the talks were good. As the relationship progressed, I want to honor God and stay righteous and honor her and set good examples for my kids. So now there's these boundaries that need to be in place. And so when she visits here, she doesn't stay at our house. I dry her, she stays at my mom's, or in the beginning she stayed at hotels, but not at our place. I don't want to fail her. I don't want to fail God. I don't want to fail me. I don't want to fail the people that non-Christians around me that know my life and my story. It's a big deal. So to bring you current on the relationship, we are now engaged, and that's fantastic news moving forward. I'm looking forward to this coming season and what God has in store for us and our family. I'm very much looking forward to God restoring balance in my house for the kids, as opposed to just having everything from a dad or male type of view, and having that mom balance in there, a mother, the male-female balance. If I may pass on some advice, stay in God's will. If you're in His will, you're in the best place you can be. So focus on that first, and then let God orchestrate the other stuff. Let God time it out, because again, His will, His timing is better for you. We all know what we want. We all know what we think we need. And at the end of the day, God knows it better. My name is Les Reinhard, and this is my story.
Still on. Important for Les, for me to mention that he's not perfect, and he's made mistakes, but he has tried to ask the right questions during a two-year season of being in a season of winter, and he's asked good questions. I've had lunch with him numerous times. He asks good questions. Instead of loneliness being the motivator that tries to get him out, he instead said, all right, God, what do you need to do in me during this season of healing and rest? I want to explore this idea of asking the wrong questions. We're going to jump to 1 Corinthians 7. We're going to start to move quickly here. 1 Corinthians 7, Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, possibly the worst verse in the Bible. He said, now for the matters you wrote about, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations. Oh, what a horrible verse. Have you, I don't know if you've ever read the Bible. You probably put it down after you got to that part. Now, if you're a guy here, you're thinking, I hate this church, right? Because that's the way you think all churches view about sex. But to understand what Paul's going through, we're going to explain it in a little bit. We have to understand the culture that it was written to. Paul is writing to the church at Corinth, which had all kinds of dysfunction. Now, I want you to catch the first part. Now, for the matters you wrote about. Apparently, Paul's letter, responding to the church at Corinth, was in response to a letter that was first written to him, right? That's where he says, now, onto the matters that you wrote about. What I find interesting is Paul is in chapter 7. We put the chapters in later. They didn't come with chapters. Chapter 7, before he even gets around to answering the questions that they asked. So he spends 6 chapters not answering their questions, but answering the questions that they should have asked. Paul knew that oftentimes there can be a gap between what we ask and what the real issues are. Go ahead and put that on the screen there, Wayne. There can be a gap from what we ask and what the real issues are that we're dealing with. And so Paul says, listen, God is not nearly as focused or concerned about answering the questions we think we need to answer or we need answers to as he is with dealing with our real issues. And so Paul, as a pastor, as a leader, says, I'm going to get to the questions you ask, but first, I'm going to answer the questions that you should have asked. And so he goes through all of these things, and he says, look, you're splitting up this church because you're all arguing about who's greater. And some of you say, well, I'm of Paul, and I'm of Cephas, and I'm of Apollo, and you're dividing yourselves up. Who is the greatest? And Paul says, I'm going to answer the question that you didn't ask. The answer is, it's not about any of us. It is always about Jesus. Paul says, the questions you should have been asking are things like this. Look at 1 Corinthians 3:2. We'll put it on the screen. He says, I gave you milk and not solid food, for you were not yet ready for it. Indeed, you're still not ready. Paul says, what you should have been asking is, why are we not growing? But you didn't ask about that. 1 Corinthians 5:1, he says, it is actually reported that there is sexual immorality among you, and of a kind that not even the pagans do not tolerate. A man is sleeping, he says, with his father's wife, and you're proud of it. Paul says, you didn't ask about this one, but I heard it through the grapevines. Knock it off. He's saying, look, you answer the, I'm going to get to your questions, but let me tell you the answers to what you should have asked. 1 Corinthians 6, Paul says, there's prostitution rings taking place in Corinth, and the people inside of the church are actually participating in these prostitution rings. And he says, I'm going to answer this question too, even though you didn't ask for it. And look, you may have come to church today with valid questions about your relationship. You know, how will I know if he or she's the right one? Or when will God bring me someone? Or when will this season end? But perhaps those aren't the questions that we should be asking. Perhaps there's deeper issues. And maybe before God leads you out of a season of winter, he first needs to answer the questions that you should be asking. Because if he doesn't deal with issues, the real issues, you may find the right one, but turn him into or her into the wrong one because you're not the right one. Because we didn't use this season of winter as a season of preparation and a time of rest. Maybe you're coming out of a marriage that was abusive, and God says, you just need to be healed. Maybe someone broke your trust and you're having trust issues. And God says, before we can move you on to spring, let's deal with this now. I know it's winter. I know everything seems dead, but you're not dead. You're just dormant. You're just resting. Maybe there's trust issues, or maybe you never found out who you really are. And so if you're single, let me just encourage you to take a step back and just not push through this winter season. Second season that we enter into is that you're going to meet someone and you're going to have a season of infatuation. Now, what happens during infatuation? They are perfect in every single way, right? They can do absolutely no wrong. All the songs on the radio make sense. You see their face in the clouds. You hear their whisper just as you're going to sleep, right? A piece of toast comes out and there are their faces, and you are giddy with love and you find yourself smiling at all times. Why? Because you're infatuated with this individual. Most likely, this is what was taking place in Song of Solomon 2. Listen to what she says. She says, listen, my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping. That's my best leap. Across the mountain, bounding over the hills. She's so excited. He's so excited. He's leaping over the hills. He's bounding over the hills, the mountains, the fields, because I get to see my love, a box of chocolates in one hand and flowers in the other. Look at verse 9. She says, my beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. She used to call me her young stag. And now I'm her middle-aged stag. And I don't so much leap through the fields as limp through the fields. But that's what happens when you get older. And then look. Look at the next verse. It says, look, there he stands behind our wall. Next verse there, Wayne. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. Look, you can get arrested for this stuff today, right? I mean, that's a little weird, like voyeurism going on here, but I don't know if he's playing peekaboo. I don't know what he's doing, but she's digging it right now, okay? She likes it, but here's the thing. 20 years into the marriage, he can do that same thing. 50% of the time she'll like it. 50% of the time she's going to call the cops on his butt, right? Because we can't understand you women. Listen, if you're a single guy, let me give you a little bit of advice. You can say the same thing to your wife when you're married on Tuesday that you said on Monday and get a completely different result. On Monday, she can get in the shower and you can say, you got it going on, girl. And she'll look at you and she'll pull you in the shower with her. On Tuesday, you can say, you got it going on, girl. And she's going to look at, is that all you think about, pervert? Right? I'm just telling you, that's the way it rolls. I mean, you thought it worked the first time. You're already taking off your shirt the second time. You're like, ladies, yes, that's all we think about. We can't help it. You can ask God why, but that's the way we roll. Now, listen, this is what's happening. There's some type of infatuation going on here, and there's this flirtation, and it's good, and life is sweet, and you know everyone's happy, and there's a season of infatuation. Experts say that infatuation typically can last from 1 day to 6 months. Now, during this season, listen, we typically don't ask any questions at all because they're perfect, right? And it causes us to ignore the stop signs that are screaming, turn around, or stop, or go the other direction. We ignore the flags because we're smitten by good looks and a good body or a nice face. And you know, we fail to look critically at the relationship because we're infatuated. Now, infatuation for me typically lasted about 4 or 5 weeks at the most. And typically after around 3 or 4 weeks on a date, you know, dating someone, I would say, hey, let's go on a road trip. And we'd go up to Sedona or something like that. Not overnight, just, you know, a one-day thing. And it would be from like 7 in the morning till 9 at night. And that was going to be our longest block of time that we spent together. And every time on the road trip, about hour 7, I start to think, I really can't stand you anymore. Has anyone else, you know, before we were holding hands and it was love is in the air, this is going to be a great trip. I'm not joking. Around hour 7, I'm thinking, I don't really like you much anymore. You're putting your dirty feet on my dashboard, which doesn't roll with me, and my wife does it all the time. Guys, anybody else have an issue with that? Maybe it's just me. Listen, it's a Prius. You get the weight off and we lean. So now, except for my wife, I remember we would go up north, and I thought, after 7 hours, you're still pretty good. And that's how I knew you are the one for me. Now, there's going to be a season of infatuation. The right questions during this time needs to be, is this relationship honoring God? Is he or she moving me closer to Christ or pushing me further away? Has God orchestrated this relationship or am I forcing it? What in their past should be a concern to me? Now, single parents, my advice to you is be careful when you introduce relationships into your family, because I know they seem perfect at week 2 or 3, but give them, you know, months 4 and 5 to see the real side of them and whether or not they're worth introducing to your children. That's just free advice for something else. Now, next season we're going to run into is a season of intimacy. Look at Psalm 2, 13 and 14. It says, the fig tree forms its early fruit. The blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise, he says, come, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the hiding places on the mountainside. Show me your face. In other words, reveal yourself to me. Don't hide anything from me. Do not conceal yourself. And then he says, let me hear your voice. For your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. No matter what season you find yourself in a relationship, always pursue intimacy. Now listen, here's the problem. Most people think that intimacy is sex and romance. Intimacy is not flowers, it's not heart-shaped chocolates, it's not romantic candlelight dinners. Intimacy is deeper than that. Intimacy, let's just call it another word, let's call it transparency. No secrets, right? Into me, you see. Intimacy, right? You can quote me on that one. Into me, you see. That's what intimacy is, that you can look into the depths of who I am. Nothing is being hidden from you. Now, romance and sex can be a byproduct of intimacy, if you're married, right? But romance comes and romance goes, but intimacy is what will hold the relationship together. So, man, let's talk about it. I know that as men, we can communicate all sorts of different things with grunts. And every grunt has a simple meaning and has a different meaning. And eventually our wives realize what those grunts mean. But in order for intimacy to occur, men, we must begin to speak in sentences to our spouse. And I know it's difficult because when I'm closed off to myself or I'm stressed out, I would just, you know, how was work? Or, you know, if the bag drops this hard versus this hard, she knows the harder the bag drops from the higher the distance, the worse my day was, right? I mean, we can communicate in those ways. But that does not enter into or encourage intimacy. For intimacy to occur, there has to be communication. Men, that means we need to talk up to our wives about where we feel weak, where we feel vulnerable, where we feel tempted. Here's the bottom line. That if we are holding back secrets, either partner in the marriage relationship or a serious dating relationship, if we're holding back secrets, there will never be the intimacy that God has intended for that relationship to have. Now, I'm not saying you bare your soul on the first date, all right? That's weird. That's psycho woman, psycho guy, right? You run from that. But as the relationship progresses, especially in that, you know, engagement times and things like that, there has to be that level of intimacy that's pursued. Here's our last one. This will apply to our married people. Then, finally, there is an ongoing season of protecting your relationship. Look at Psalm 215. It's a great verse. Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom. Now catch the metaphor that she's saying there, right? Catch the foxes that's going to ruin what we have going on right now. This love and we got, you know, there's some good stuff moving and there's some chemistry and the vineyards are in bloom. But they're saying we are not blind to the fact that there are foxes, things out there that can choke out our love for one another. And they're saying, let's be proactive and head off anything that can wreck our marriage and our love relationship, anything that can damage us. Let's catch the fox now so it doesn't have an opportunity to ruin us later. And so they say, look, let's look through the vineyard and let's catch the little sneaky sly fox, because if we give it room before we knew it, before we know it, the vineyard is dead. Now, if you're dating, catching the foxes mean that you keep it zipped, buttoned, hooked, strapped, because sex is more than just a physical act, right? Physical promiscuity in relationships prior to marriage causes issues. I'm going to talk about that in just a moment. If you're married, what does that mean to us? To keep the foxes out that can choke out our love. I'm going to jump back to 1 Corinthians 7 to find that answer. Paul says again, now for the matters that you wrote about, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. Now, notice the quotes about the is good for a man not to have sexual relations for a woman. Paul is responding to a letter that was written to him, and he is saying, in other words, you wrote to me this letter that said it is good for a man not to have sexual relations for a woman. So it's not Paul who's saying this. In other words, he's saying, you wrote to me about this, and now I'm going to answer your question. So men, when you first read that, you're like, oh my gosh, I hate the Bible. All right, that's not what it's meaning, okay? Paul's responding to their question about this. Now, there were some in Corinth who were promoting abstinence in the marriage relationship. We talked about it a little bit last week, most likely because there was a group that believed that the highest plane of spirituality meant that that we deny all physical urges, including the desire or the urge for sex. And the Corinthians, they adhered to a Greek philosophical dualism that said there is the body and then there is the soul. The soul is spiritual and the body is evil. So do away with all desires of the body and then you will be more spiritual. So in some level, they probably approached Paul and said, hey, is it good for a man and a woman? They shouldn't have sex and we should deny ourselves of this thing because we're going to be more spiritual. The other camp that was going on said, well, because it's just the body, have all the sex you want. And that was taking place in Corinth as well. That's why in 1 Corinthians 6:12, Paul says, you're justifying your immorality by sleeping around with people and going to prostitutes. Why? Because they just feel the body is the body and what you do in the body doesn't affect the soul. And Paul's like, you got it all wrong. And so part of this is saying, hey, Paul, is it better for married people to just not have any sexual relations because then they're on a higher level of spirituality? So Paul's going to answer that. And so here's what Paul says, verse 2. He says, but since sexual immorality is occurring, each man should have sexual relations with his own wife and each woman with her own husband. Now the word but is, in a sense, Paul's disagreement with the statement that was made in verse 1. Paul's saying, you think it's more spiritual for a man and a woman to abstain from sex, but there's all kinds of sexual immorality taking place. You're saying you're going to be more spiritual, but in reality, you have fallen to the depth of what even pagans don't fall to, right? Because there's kids sleeping with their parents. And so Paul is going to start to make this point here. Now listen, it is not that Paul is against sex. Paul is being pro-marriage here is what he is talking about. And so he continues with this thought. This, in other words, this is God's standard for sexual relationships, that man and a woman should satisfy one another. Not anti-sex, he's pro-marriage, pro-sex. Part of the Lord's provision in this idea of combating sexual immorality for married people is that they enter into the sexual relationship often. We're going to see that in just a little bit. God's standard is for two married people to engage in the activity of sex. Now, single people, listen. The standards are not to make us miserable. They're for our protection. It's interesting. You go all the way back to Genesis in chapter 2, verse 18. God is about to put man to sleep and create woman for the two of them, right? To bring them together. The two shall become one. And what's interesting, before he does that in verse 18, listen to what he says to Adam in verse 17. He says, but you must not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, for when you eat from it, you will certainly die. Here's what's happening. God says, before I give you this blessing, I'm going to set up a boundary for you. We know the story, right? They eat from the tree. Because God knows that if he gives you the blessing without setting up a boundary, the blessing will become a curse. And that's what we enter into when we engage in all kinds of sexual activity. Sex was supposed to be the blessing, but God says, here's the boundary. And if you take the blessing with no boundary, the blessing is going to become a curse. And God says, I'm not against this idea of sex, but work with it in the boundaries that I have set up. Verse 3. Paul says, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and likewise, the wife to her husband. Now, what does this mean? It means what every man in here hope it means. That's what it means. Like some of you are thinking, baby, I'm going to fulfill my duty tonight. Yeah, I know what you're thinking, right? Men, listen. Men and women, when we stop fulfilling our responsibility to our spouse, we let the fox in. And it's sly, and it goes unnoticed, but eventually the fox will destroy the vineyard. Now, what is our responsibility? Let me just talk to men. I'm a guy. What's our responsibility? Sexual responsibility, that's the easy part. Other of our responsibilities are faithfulness and our spiritual leadership and our honesty and honoring her and sacrifice. And if we fail in our duty to our wife, the fox comes in. So let me just ask you this. Has a fox entered into your marital relationship? Has the sexual satisfaction, as we're talking about sex in this series, has a fox entered in? And has something started to happen? Now, when I counsel people, oftentimes they'll say on one level or another that we basically have a sexless marriage. Sometimes that happens. And one of the questions that I ask is, has it always been like that? So go back further into the relationship. What did it used to be like? And typically they would say, no, it wasn't like that. We were engaged and she couldn't keep her hands off of me and he couldn't keep his hands off of me. But now there's just these dry spurts that happen and nothing is going on. Now listen, please hear me carefully. I'm not saying that your sex drive at 21 should be what your sex drive should be for the rest of your life. I understand that there are medical issues. I understand that there are children that come into play. I understand that there's postpartum. I understand that there are seasons of life. But when a marriage goes for long spurts of not having sexual contact, something has broken in that relationship. I am painting with broad strokes. Something has broken in that relationship. Something, a fox got in. You know, maybe it's that the woman doesn't feel valued, or the man's having his issues, or they're not connecting on any type of emotional level, but something has taken place. And so Paul says, look, both of you fulfill your duties to one another. Look at verse 4. He says, the wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. Glory to God on this verse, right? Some of you ladies, you're starting to cross your arms, and the men are saying, you preacher, yo! That's my life verse! Now, before you run out and put it up on the fridge, understand what was happening, all right? Men saw women as their property. And therefore, you know, whatever this verse is like, oh yeah, this makes total sense to me. But Paul introduces this idea of mutual submission. Look how he finishes the verse. He says, in the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. Now, at this point, the men would have been like, what are you talking about? It should all be about us and how we get satisfied, and we, you know, she has to. And Paul's like, no, that's not how this works. There's mutual submission that should be taking place. Here's what Paul's saying, breaking it down like this. He's saying, look, in the marriage relationship, it's not about you. Boo. Just look at the person next to you and just say, it's not about you. That's what Paul's saying. It's not about you. In the marriage relationship, it's not about you. It's mutual submission to one another. Now, we mess this up, right? And Paul says, desire's good. And the world would tell you to always act on your desire. And desire is good. Desire can light a fire, but I think only duty can keep the fire going. Meaning that our relationships have to be more than just when the desire is burning, that this duty, responsibility, not just sexual in all areas, keeps the marriage close together. It goes beyond just desire. Now, let me tell you one of the things that can ruin the vineyard. And we're going to end here shortly. I think unrealistic expectations can let a fox into the marriage and ruin the vineyard. So I think sometimes we can be in love with the picture of marriage, our idea of marriage, than what the marriage is really all about. See, if you're one that's only going to be in the mood when there's heart-shaped beds and rose petals on the mattress and champagne on ice, you're going to be severely disappointed in the marriage relationship. I think we've watched too many marriages that plant images in our head that this is what sex is always going to be like, and we come into it with these unrealistic expectations. I think that we look at images on Facebook of other married couples, and they're saying, oh, look what my husband did for me, and look how great they were, look at the beauty of my wife, and oh my goodness, look what they did. And we compare their highlight reels with our day-to-day operations. No one puts on Facebook, my husband didn't do a thing for me today. We only post the good stuff. And so we compare their highlight reel with our day-to-day operation. This summer, my wife and I, we took our 20th anniversary. It was, you know, we're 2.5 years late, but we took our 20th anniversary. We did a cruise to Alaska, 12 days. It took about, you know, 18 days, drove up the coast. And so one of the greatest times we've ever had. Romance everywhere. It was the love boat. I mean, it was a good time. We have this picture that we took there that's on Facebook. Go ahead and put that image up, please. We took this picture on the cruise, and we got dressed up. Now, you don't need to clap for that. We got dressed up every night to have these romantic dinners, and we did this thing. I'm the romantic one in our relationship. We did this I like it when cards that we wrote, like, I like it when over 23 years, when you do this. Now, for a guy, I had to keep steering away from sexual stuff, and I had to go deeper than that, and, you know, we would exchange these, you know, I like it when you do this, or you say this to me, and those kinds of things. Extremely romantic. We can look at that and think, oh, how romantic they must be. But let me show you reality. Next image. That's reality. Now hit the next slide. Before and after. Sometimes romance can be a vineyard killer because we set these expectations up that cannot happen. And if we go into the relationship thinking romance, eventually you're going to meet his ugly brother, reality. And that's reality, right? Hey, I love getting dressed up on this side, but that's good too. And if the only time we're going to think, well, I'm in it, is this side, man, we're going to, reality comes a-creeping. And a fox can get into the vineyard and destroy it. And destroy it if we're not careful. So we cannot be in love with the picture of marriage. Look, desire is good. If you get married, you need to understand that, yeah, you can come into it with desire, but somebody needs to talk to you about duty. There are times you're going to show up and you just need to go to work. You're going to lay down your life for your spouse even when you don't feel like it. Because that's what marriage is. That's what it's supposed to be about. And so we come into marriage asking the wrong question of what can I get out of it? And Paul says, it's not about you. It has to be deeper than that. You can't get the gift without giving first. And so you're going to go through life with these expectations in your marriage about romance, and reality is going to come calling. And then he says this in verse 5, do not deprive each other. Now, here's my challenge to you, all right? Men and women typically have different sex drives. If you're married, here's my challenge. At some point this week, I want you to ask the question, how often do you need it? If you've never discussed that as married people, you need to enter into that relationship. Some of you might be surprised. My wife and I, we had a conversation on this several years ago. And I said, look, here's the reality. I mean, I'm a guy. We all know, you know, guys were visually stimulated and drawn to those things. And I fight it like everyone else. It's just the reality of how God created us. You know, it's constantly being on guard. And I told my wife, I said, look, if we go too long, and, you know, I won't tell you the time frame that we put. You don't need to know that. It was every day. You know what I'm saying? No, it was every day. So, I'm joking. And we said the time. I said, when we go beyond that, I am overly sensitive to the skin around me. I said, look, and hear me, ladies. I am not putting our struggle on you even remotely. Not even remotely. But in a married relationship, I told her, when it goes too long, my antennas are up. And man, it becomes even more difficult. And we had this, you know, a very healthy discussion about it. And she's like, how do you guys live like that? I'm like, I don't know. So listen, you need to have that if you've never had that discussion. Some of you may say, well, you know, we're engaging in sex every 2 weeks. I need it every 3 days. And your spouse has no idea. It could be either one, all right? Just a conversation, maybe on the Great Date Challenge, a Can't Wait Date Challenge, you know, have that conversation. And maybe the red light will be a real long red light. No, I'm joking on that part. Erase that from your mind. It shouldn't go that way. Listen to what it says. Verse 5, he continues, do not deprive each other except for perhaps by mutual consent for a time so that you may be devoted yourself to prayer. Yeah, that's going to happen. All right, but moving on. He says, then, joking, it should happen, then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. We go too long. It's not on you. And I make it clear to Sheila, my temptation, my struggle's not on you. This is on me. But in our marriage relationship, this is what can help. And that was a healthy conversation that we had. And so if your sex life is not what you need, maybe a fox has gotten in and you need to start with conversation. Healthy conversation, not accusing one another. Somewhere, something broke down in the relationship and a fox got under the fence. And what that looks like can differ in all relationships. But it has to be an ongoing season of protecting our relationship. Song of Solomon ends chapter 2 like this. My beloved is mine and I am his. He browses among the lilies until the day breaks and the shadows flee. What's she saying? It is all night long is what she's saying. I mean, that's, you know, until the day breaks and the shadows flee. So my encouragement to all of us that we start asking the right questions in whatever season of life you may find yourself in. Because if we ask the wrong questions, we never get the right questions answered. And we're always off focus because we're pursuing the wrong answers because we're asking the wrong questions. Two resources for you. The marriage conference that's coming up, encourage you to do it. The Can't Wait Date Challenge, Pick that up on the way out. Make sure you grab one. Invest in your relationship. And then the last thing before we pray, Symphony is in today, and I'm going to need your help up here because it's 11:20. We went 10 minutes late, and I have to clear the stage off by 12 o'clock. So please help us in that. Stand with me. Next week, we're going to wrap up this series with the 50 Shades of Solomon. It'll be a little bit more involved. You may want to watch the children ages on that one. But we'll approach it in the same manner. It's okay to laugh about these things, be a little lighthearted, but we also need to look at what God's best is for us, all right? Lord, I just want to speak a blessing over every marriage relationship in here right now. And if you feel comfortable, just take your wife's hand, put your arm around her, and just, Lord, I speak a blessing over them. God, whatever area they need to be blessed in, would you come and bless them in that? Lord, bless them with open communication. Bless them in being transparent with one another. Bless them this week to have the difficult conversations, not in a way of accusing one another. Bless them. Lord, wherever a fox has gotten in and began to destroy the vineyard, let it be revealed and let that we may chase them out to guard our marriages, that they would not be destroyed. And I pray that over every marriage here. But God, I know it doesn't happen unless we engage in the conversations. And so I speak that over you. I pray for every relationship, a dating relationship, that you would pursue God's best for you and God's standard for you in that relationship. That you would not allow the foxes to come in. The young men, that they would not be giving themselves over to images that are going to later come back and haunt them. Keep the foxes out of their vineyards. Lord, help us to ask the right questions. Because I'm confident when we ask the right questions, you give us the right answers. And so I bless you today, church. I bless you in deep, productive, fruitful conversations. And getting the foxes out of your vineyard. I pray that over you. I speak that over you. In the wonderful name of our Savior and our Lord Jesus, we pray. Amen.